This is the Climb to Space.
Hey guys, this is Toast.
And this is Eternal.
And I thought I would do an audio version of a blog post that I'm going to put on declinefm.com that I'm titling 15 Reasons Why Public Schools Rarely Produce Libertarians. And so I thought in audio form, I would just bounce these ideas off Eternal and see what he thinks.
I am rubber, you're glue. What bounces off me sticks to you.
Okay, so number one, individualism requires self-sufficiency. Schools do not promote self-sufficiency.
Absolutely not. After all, in schools, you're getting all the goals handed down to you from the top level, you know, from teachers, from administrators, and it comes down through the bureaucracy to you. And you don't really define your own goals. You don't have your own motivations that you fulfill. Rather, you're just fulfilling random obligations that society's deemed are necessary for you to go out into the world, whether they are actually important or not.
And sure, see that in college. It's the type of student who always asks, is this going to be on the test? They ask that all the time. And of course, students aren't, even when they're in the classroom, they're not in this position where they are really in a position where they could go out and find information on their own, whether it's going on the internet, looking at Wikipedia, running over to the library to find some information, whatever that happens to be, they're not doing it. When you're in a math classroom, you don't get what's going on. You ask the person next to you. He doesn't know. You go and ask the teacher. And that's all I've got for number one. So number two. Schools do a poor job at teaching how to be a self-determined learner. Students often don't have any way of knowing how to reach a conclusion, even if they wanted to.
Now, definitely look at the way textbooks or classes are structured. It's here are the answers, and these we're going to learn how to do these specific types of problems and turn the crank and come out with the answer that the teacher or the test wants, you know, especially when there's a standardized test involved. You know, it's just figuring out how to answer those tests or get to the specific solutions that authorities want you to get to. It has nothing to do with, we're going to start from very basic principles and use logic and reason to march from point A to some conclusion that you don't know about yet.
Well, they give some lip service to things like the scientific method, don't they? That, well, you at least start from a hypothesis. But the truth is, those hypotheses come out of just nowhere, don't they? You go into your science manual, whatever your homework happens to be that day. I don't remember that much of what went on in like high school biology or whatever. But you look in your manual and it's like, okay, we'll just assess the hypothesis that, whatever it happens to be. And it's never this process of making your own hypotheses, evaluating any difficult information. Analyzing just isn't that difficult. And so students never really see how you develop new knowledge. It's even math isn't sort of done from this deductive logic point of view. It's more like, hey, the textbook just says that this is how life is, and so use those theorems. Good job. It's not really a good style of learning. On to number three. Qualities that are rewarded in school are not creativity or problem-solving skills.
Absolutely not, and you can see that easily because what are grades given for? Grades are given for performing well on the examinations, for being obedient and showing up to class. Gosh, I mean, go back to elementary school. Think back, you know, when you were a kid, what was, you know, half that report card? It was like behavior. You were graded on your behavior.
Citizenship, they called it.
Yeah, so you're graded on your ability to adhere to authority, to behave in a closed environment, to get along with other people that you're forced to be with. You know, everything that is nothing to do with the real world and actually being a productive person.
Problem solving is a really long-term goal, isn't it? That you have these, you know, sort of high ideas. You want to grow your problem-solving skills, but that's never going to happen in a situation where you have these standardized tests. And teachers their job depends on getting you, the student, to do well on whatever standardized test happens to be popular in your state. And so you're just memorizing what you need to do to get past that next test, that next examination, and that's not, you're not developing skills. Absolutely not. Number four, obedience is rewarded. Self-direction is discouraged, except when explicitly permitted.
That's true. That's very true. I like that last part. Self-direction is something where I have a goal and I want to explore it. I want to try to, you know, do something on my own that I want to do, and it's nothing to do with about pleasing authorities. Rather, you'll get the occasional project where it's like you have guidelines and you can do everything you want in those guidelines, but you has to adhere to some particular metric or something. And there's not that much room for exploration, especially the younger you are. And I think that really builds the framework where people are expecting certain guidelines in the real world. I mean, it's great if you're a worker, if you're going to be, you know, some sort of cog in the wheel at a big company or something, you do one task, you just get the stuff handed down by your boss. But if you're going to be an entrepreneur, if you're going to be, you know, running a small business or doing some creative arts or going into independent work, those are not skills that help you one bit. Hurts you.
Imagine trying to learn math on your own and how much that would differ from a high school math class. In high school math class, it doesn't really matter whether you know the material or not, does it? It just, you're going to do your homework because your grade depends on it. You're going to be tested on something you very obviously understand, and it's going to go at the same pace if you don't understand it. And the whole point of self-direction is to pace yourself to decide what is important to you, which often, of course, corresponds to what happens in real life, just like you said. But in school, no, you're just going to do what the teacher says because that's how you're given your grade. Number five, to students, learning equals meeting some random person's desires. That random person's your teacher, of course.
Well, not just your teacher. I mean, in some level, the teachers also have to meet random people's desires, which are the administrators, which are the bureaucrats who set, you know, the school's education curriculum, either at the state or the federal level, you know, the test producers who create the metrics by which teachers are examined, as well as students. You know, it's all about fulfilling random desires. It is very little about fulfilling the desires of the self. And that's really where the disconnect comes between, you know, statism and libertarianism is, you know, statism is all about fulfilling other people's desires. I mean, the whole structure of the state, the whole structure of government is about getting people to fulfill other people's desires. Whereas libertarians are people who sit down and realize, well, people act rationally. They're rational, self-interested actors. And that's the way people should be, because it leads to the best and most satisfactory ends for everybody.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It sort of has this really bad effect where students go home and they were just at school for 6.5 hours. You maybe with, like, you know, sort of your commute bumper on either side of 30 minutes sometimes. And so the kid is exhausted, comes home. Oh, finally, I don't have to learn. Because learning to them is meeting some other random person's desires. Now this is the time where they're going to meet their own desires. And so that's not going to be learning to them. So they're going to say, oh, this is the time when I do not learn. And that's just destructive to the people's humanity. Learning is what makes people human, and it's a really enjoyable experience if you can manage to distance it from public schools. It's wonderful. People don't get to experience that. Number six. Just like any other bureaucracy, the way to get ahead is via social skills and gaining social acceptance, which is answering in the way that pleases whoever is distributing the grades.
Oh my gosh, how many times have, you know, we sat in schools and, you know, the answer is something which makes absolutely no sense or is baseless, or, you know, quite frankly, the teacher is saying a bunch of stuff you don't care about because it's stupid, because it has no relevance to real life, and it's just not something which you should be wasting your time learning. But the way you get a good grade is, of course, catering to the authority, that is the teacher, making sure that the teacher likes you. I mean, I think about all the brown nosing, teacher's pets type things that go on. And people, of course, hate each other for it because they know that's the best way to get ahead. And they hate it. It creates a prison environment is what it does. It's that kind of click versus click, My social group is going to watch out for each other and heck with your social group. And you have to fit into groups. It's a really bad environment and has nothing to do with learning.
Oh, sure. And the truth is, one of the reasons why this has become the case is because, in fact, schools actually do signal to employers students' abilities to gain social acceptance. And in fact, a lot of jobs actually require social acceptance. Because, well, frankly, because a lot of them are these governmental or legalese jobs. And so one of the things you need to signal to employer is that you can gain social acceptance and sort of ride those waves. Number 7, participation in class is always influenced by other people around you. Disagreement is usually met with scorn from teachers and, most importantly, from peers.
This is definitely, I think, the big point. When you disagree with the teacher or with the class, especially when it comes to something like maybe you heard differently about history, or you have a different viewpoint on, I don't know, what, climate change or something that is politicized, or something that's completely not politicized, something like math, like maybe you don't get something. Well, people are going to leap on you for interrupting the process, for speaking out against the crowd. They don't like things which are different because it makes them feel uncomfortable.
Well, they want to breeze by. And you're preventing them from breezing by answering, even in a math class, because you're creating the situation where if you're wrong, you're risking being wrong, of course. And if you're wrong, well, the teacher's going to go off on some other tangent, and then kids aren't going to be left alone. The ultimate goal in schools is to be left alone. And so every single student has this... It's exactly what you described, where you just don't want to answer because people could get mad at you.
An impetus to silence is what I would call it.
Yeah, and so the first step in your decision-making process is, are people okay with my decisions? That's not individualism. It's not at all. You're not a self-regulated human being when the first thing you have to think about is, are the people that are immediately around you? It's just not. Number 8, success in school is determined by written formal assessments, which tend to largely require rote memorization. The effect is believing that rote memorization and appealing to authority is the best strategy for forming opinions.
Certainly, I mean, just look at the amount of standardized testing. I mean, you got things like what, No Child Left Behind being the most recent institution that is just test and test and test, and it's all about, you know, saying the right things in the right magical way to get to the next tier, you know, to pass through the barrier of authority.
Yeah, NCLB specifically requires that school systems have some sort of standardized testing so that they can prove to the Department of Education or whatever the NCLB administration is that you are worthy of funding. And, you know, at some level, schools are businesses, so they're seeking funding. They want to be able to pay their teachers more, pay more teachers. So they just, all that they care about is that children pass these standardized tests. What's the best way to do it? You live in the moment. You try to get them to memorize the correct facts so they can regurgitate the correct facts when they're handed this test. And that's it. And so students think that this is how you come to knowledge. This is their epistemology. You just look for what other people think and you regurgitate it. That's not libertarian. That's not individualistic. And number 9, teachers, and we touched on this, teachers care only about standardized testing. And indeed, schools are putting a lot of pressure on teachers to make lesson plans that conform to whatever standards the state has. And as a result, teachers just don't care about helping students grow as learners.
Even if they did care, and I think this is an important point to make, there's a lot of stuff, just random information, that students have to memorize so they can pass that, in Virginia we call it the standards of learning, the SOL, but whatever your state may have as the standardized test. Teachers are forced to basically sit there and regurgitate a bunch of facts to kids who have to regurgitate them back to the teacher and regurgitate them back on a written examination. There's no time to explore, you know, forming opinions through inductive and deductive logic. There's no time to explore how you parse through information for what's true and what's false.
Even worse, school systems have pacing guides where you have to spend an exact amount of time on each specific subject. And if you deviate from that in the lesson plans that most principals require you to turn in, then, you know, administration falls down on you. Teachers don't have the time. They don't have the ability to help students grow as learners. And then number 10, teachers have an incentive not to teach autodidactism and problem-solving strategies in general, because the truth is, it can replace their own jobs.
I think that it's important to look at the teaching institution as a system, the education system as a whole. You know, teachers are not there to produce, you know, productive individuals. They're there to produce people who basically can do just enough to get out there, hold a job, produce some taxable income, and vote. And that's the part where, you know, as libertarians, we really see people coming out of school don't really know how to teach themselves further.
Yeah, and I guess there's sort of this counter argument to this that maybe Mrs. Second Grade teacher can go and actually teach all of the sort of metacognitive strategies for self-learning at, you know, the second grade level, and then suddenly the students can just learn from books the rest of their life. And given that that does not happen, you could maybe have a counter argument to this, to bullet point number 10 about autodidactism. The truth is, I don't buy it, because teachers bounce around grade levels so frequently that I still think they have incentive for their own career to not crowd out the jobs of other teachers.
Not just that, I mean, they're often forced into unions, and they often belong to unions, so
right,
you don't want to go against the union.
And the union has its own sort of like mythology and their own narrative that they pass down onto teachers. I mean, if you're in a union, you get mail like multiple times a week, and you know, you're told that you're a teacher, you're entitled to this stuff. They play on your pride. It's very tough to actually escape that sort of brainwashing for most people. Echo that flows right into point 11, that teachers are rarely libertarians, and they themselves might not see the necessity of teaching self-sufficiency.
Well, yeah, the walls that, you know, bureaucracy erects around students to keep them contained in an environment that is controlled also go around teachers too. I mean, if you're a freedom-loving individual, if you're somebody who likes to explore lots of different ideas, who really, you know, cares about forming, you know, individual opinions and such, you're going to find yourself very uncomfortable, if not just straight up unhappy, as a teacher. It's something that weeds out people who don't like teaching the system.
It's true. The bureaucracy is rough. I mean, because this sort of describes myself. I'm a libertarian who's actually seeking a teaching job, and the amount of hoops I have to jump through, it makes me sick to my stomach. It really, really does. It's horrible bureaucracy, worse than anything I've ever seen. Imagine if every day on your job were the DMV. That's what it's like. And so there's sort of an added effect with this bullet. People tend to take values from those who surround them. And if you have teachers all the time, these authority figures who don't hold libertarian values, I just don't think you're going to be exposed to them, and you're not going to find libertarian values serious. And so people that exit school, that affects that. Number 12, students are frequently told how they are in school because they are young and ignorant. It's totally okay to restrict basic freedoms if the other person is deficient in some way, right?
Yeah, I mean, remember, schools are basically prisons. You have to eat the food they provide often. You know, walk in a line, be quiet, stay organized, don't talk back to the teacher, you know, raise your hand if you got to go to the bathroom, stay within the confines, can't leave campus, you got to go because of truancy laws. It is such an unbelievably controlled environment.
You can't stand up.
And if you treated an adult the way you treat, you know, the average student, the average 9-year-old child, it would be considered, you know, crazier and more abusive than most prisons. I mean, it's completely nuts.
Yeah, it's really terrible. But most young people think that they're in school because they need to be, that it's right that they should be, that they're actually maybe privileged to be in a society that offers them this school. And so 13, school cracks self-esteem by cementing social duties and roles.
Definitely. As I was saying before, you're basically treated like dirt as a student. And that is your job, is to be dirt. I mean, you're supposed to sit down, shut up, and, you know, quote unquote, learn. You know, listen to what the authorities say, obey the authorities, and you just go through this rite of passage, and that's what you're just supposed to do. That's the way society is structured, and it's for your own good. Huh. And nobody who goes through this is ever exposed to the idea that maybe, you know, this isn't the best use of their time. Maybe this is not the best way to teach them new skills.
Yeah. I mean, it very well might be the best way to spend time for some people, but I don't think it's right for most people. And I don't, okay, here, look, how many times have you heard this? My parents told me this. You're a student. School is your full-time job. That's what you do because you're a student. I mean, like, I heard that like every day. Every time I complained, you know, you just can't. You're a student.
And I want to add to that. I mean, it's extra amusing because if you were actually working a full-time job, even doing something as stupid as delivering pizzas or, you know, filing papers, you would learn so much more about the real world and what skills are important than if you were sitting in a classroom 8 hours a day for 12 years straight.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, I don't know how intellectually stimulating delivering pizzas is, but you'd at least get paid for it, and then it would actually be a job. So, number 14. Students are graded on citizenship in elementary school, and then they have civics and government class in high school.
Well, as we said at the beginning of this podcast, if you remember back to elementary school, there's an entire section of the report card, which is behavior. And you are graded on, you know, whether you get along with other students and, you know, obey authorities and don't talk back to the teacher and are, you know, in the places you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. And it's all basically creating, you know, a carrot for obeying authority. And it makes it such that people think that it is good to obey arbitrary authority. It is good to conform to social structures and not to question them.
Yeah, it positively reinforces obedience. It does. At a fundamental level, people aim for that high grade, and it makes them happy when they achieve the good grade in obedience. Yeah. It doesn't reinforce good things.
And it shames people who act as individuals.
It brings the system down upon those who don't get a B in citizenship. I mean, I got a low grade in something like respect for authority when I was in elementary school, and my parents just... the hammer came down.
Watch out, we got a badass over here.
Yeah, I know, right? Number 15. Finally, we've reached the end. The material presented is a cartoon version of reality. And that's at its best. And it's blatantly false at its worst.
I think if you're a libertarian, you obviously start thinking about history. You start thinking about economics. The idea that, you know, maybe Franklin Delano Roosevelt rode down on a magical chariot and save the day for, you know, the Great Depression or something, and showering all the poor people with, you know, golden food and jobs. And
Hoover invented laissez-faire capitalism.
Yeah, that nonsense. And you know, when you learn real history, you obviously find that history is one of the most abused. But it's not just history. It's also mathematics and sciences as well, which is to say, you know, in the real world, math and science is not this wonderful clear-cut thing. It's not like, here's the problem, and you find the one solution. It's you go out there, and you have some goal you have to reach, and you have to use the scientific method and various mathematical techniques to achieve, you know, some sort of reasonable answer. And that's so you can do something in the real world, produce a bridge or, you know, an engine or something.
Yeah, that's all I've got for you guys. So what's the sum total of all of these problems that I just listed and will be a blog very soon? People exit school with no sense of self-worth, no ability to come to conclusions on their own. They're totally susceptible to media and advertisement. They don't have a lot of problem-solving skills. They're probably pretty good at pleasing powerful people, pleasing their peers, and that comes at their own expense a lot of the time. They're obedient. And truth is, they're not self-directed. They're usually looking to the heavens and government to create the next goal in life, or even to put food on the plate. And so I don't think any of these qualities are acceptable to individualists. And so you can find more at reddit.com/r/declinedestate. And you can find our show at declinefm.com. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody.